We are starting the Mystic Pete Chronicles, and we begin the show with a tune called Afro-Cuban Soul Rebels by Dyramir Gonzalez.
Aquí no es muñequitos Mickey. On the street surviving life freakies. Rebels is the stamp of our soul. The new sound of the funk, the jazz, the hip hop y el soul. Rebels como el Afrocan y el Mozambique. Del Guaguancó, Yoruba y Abacuá. De tradición, de libertad. Del fruto y las raíces. De unión, diversidad. Blancos y negros de batá. De batá, de batá. Revolución. Power to the
starting the Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. In today's show, I feature music and an interview with Dairamir Gonzalez, Cuban-American composer and musician, and also an essay by Mark Porter Zasada called Purpose of Music. Stay tuned. Mystic Pete Chronicles. Mystic Pete here with Dairamir Gonzalez on March 5th, 2024. Hi, Dairamir.
Hello, 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 hello. I'm very, very happy to be here. Thank you, Pete, for the great opportunity.
Yeah, well, you are a Cuban musician who's now living in the United States and touring the world and coming up with fantastic music. I've been listening to a lot of your recordings. It's really top quality jazz and very innovative, a lot of ideas. So tell me about your music and your work.
Well, when you say jazz, I always try to not to make it narrow into that genre only, because, you know, jazz music for me have always been an excuse to create a lot of different harmonies and have more colors for me to add to my music. I'm an artist. I'm a musician who hear colors in my head. I hear melodies, and then I use the tool of jazz as one of the tools that I use for to color my idea. Basically, I'm coming from the tradition of European classical piano. Since I started with 7-8 years old in Havana in the music conservatory, starting from day one, Bach, Beethoven, Mozart, Debussy, Chopin, and in Cuba we have that, which is a very, very, very helpful to create a technique that we need to, on top of that, embody any type of other word. Then coming from Cuba as well, you know, I grew up being in a European classical conservatory type of environment in the school, and then in the street you have the cha-cha-cha, the Cuban music, the popular Cuban music with my father. My father is a trumpet player. He's someone who I admire a lot, someone who that has been guiding me many ways through the long journey of music. This is someone who has put, along with my mom, that mentality that, you know, the career is your responsibility, and you have to be on top of your game and still, you know, and fight for it, because no one else will do. So I grew up with that. That gave me a warrior, you know, and I have been going through different obstacles that are like anyone who has it. But, you know, but at the end of the day, when I look back, I can always see that the career have always been, you know, steady, you know, in ascending position, which is always sometimes you get eager to get more stuff done and go to the next level, next song, next thing, next project. But even in the moment, you can see, man, I'm doing this and this and this, and that's inspiring for me.
Classical training, Cuban traditional musical influences, and it sounds a little like jazz now, but it's bigger than jazz.
It is bigger than jazz. It is bigger than jazz because, you know, at some point, I have became a music ambassador for Cuban music. So I'm someone who carries a message, an image, someone who has a long vision of even though I tour around the world, but staying connected with my culture, with my root in Havana, going back to Cuba, doing master classes, donating my time to connect with the youth, to really talk to them about how to be independent with their career, how to be someone that can be a role model next in the few years to come. All of that takes time, take a patience, and take a lot of effort. But at the same time, when you have in mind that you know that your message is bigger than yourself, that's something that you do it with pleasure. You know, I'm the same when I'm in the United States, when I'm touring in Mexico, in Colombia, when I'm touring in Europe, I see myself as a Cuban music ambassador who live in New York, who traveled the world, and I continue to carry that legacy. Cuban music has been one of those genres that have been inspiring a lot of musicians around the world. And if there is so many musicians and artists around the world admiring Cuban music, me, myself, and I, that I'm a Cuban myself, I'm the one who has to be even more proud of it and carry that message even with more passion. So that's something that is important. Sometimes, you know, for economical reasons, for political reasons, for different type of personal reasons, a lot of people who defeat their country, not only Cuba, Spain, anywhere. There is a lot of people around the world for different reasons. Some of them maintain, keep the contact with their root, with their family and stuff, the culture. Some of them decide to separate themselves from that. And it's also fine, but in my size, I believe that I continue having a lot of value of coming back to Cuba and being inspired back and forth.
Good response. Well, you talk about being an ambassador and politics. I mean, this interview is really about you as a musician, but we can't really avoid the issue of politics between the United States and Cuba. We've had a long, important, collaborative, and conflicted relationship. And I just bring up politics because sometimes this can really interfere with the cultural exchange, you know, just the freedom artists have to express themselves, to come here, to return. Has that impacted you a lot, or are you negotiating it easily?
Well, nothing easy. Nothing easy. You have to put a lot of effort. So, for example, when I came to the U.S. in 2010, I had to fight myself to earn this spot here. Because I was awarded a scholarship at Berklee College of Music in Boston that was very tough to gain, to obtain. But then when I came, I had to also fight not only to have that spot here at the top music college in the U.S. and in the world, but also to be one of the top ones that I wanted to be, and also to be able to graduate summa cum laude, also to be able to manage to speak the language properly, which is a big barrier, you know, coming so much English toward me that I was so overwhelming, so mentally drained. But when you have a purpose, you know, the purpose is clear and you go from there and you make it happen. But in relationship with Cuba, not so many people knows that, when Cubans come to the U.S., if you spend 1 year and 1 day without leaving the U.S., you can apply to get the American green card, you know, after. So back then, back in 2010, Cuba only give you 11 months to be out of Cuba. If you spend 11 months and 1 day, you are actually officially on the sector. You defeat Cuba, you know. So you can come back, but you can come back, but you lost all your connection, with, you know, legal connection with Cuba. So I never wanted to do that. So the U.S. gave me one visa, the visa of 3 months only. 3 months only, even though my paper said that I was covered for 3 years. I have visa for 3 months. So nevertheless, I came to the United States, and then 6-7 months after, eight months after they finished the first year of the school, I come back to Cuba, lose that visa, do the hustle again to obtain a visa to come back to the school again, and then do it again for 3 years in a row, because I had in mind that I was learning so much at Darien University. I was learning so many vocabulary of jazz vocabulary, big band, writing for different ensembles, speaking about, you know, Duke Ellington, Bill Strayhorn, McCoy Tyner, Bill Evans, Bud Powell, Charlie Parker, my heroes, freaking heroes. I was like, man, this is just such an amazing experience that I cannot be greedy and selfish just to keep it for myself and then never again come back to Cuba. That was in my mind. I said, absorbing all of this is important, but I have to come back and sit with the youth and sit with the friends of my friend that are in Havana with a little iPad trying to see how they can listen to Bud Powell. But if I come and someone told me this is the way Bud Powell in 1940 was actually playing the music, and this is the scale that he was using, the bebop scales, the passing tone, the different tools that you have to make the study path shorter and faster, I need to bring back that to Cuba. So that has been one of my biggest proud is to be able to come back every year and give back to my community.
I don't think people in the United States realize how difficult, how catastrophic it can be when you're dealing with these immigration issues. And that's another very political issue right now. And a lot of ideas and reaction and, you know, just meanness, actually. But for people who are trying to negotiate this international transportation, getting one place, you know, it can just be so difficult and fraught. But I'm glad you've found your way through, because we can now enjoy your wonderful art creation. I mean, bottom line, it's all about cultural sharing and enjoying each other's music and food and company. You know what I'm saying? This is just something that can enrich humanity. But so let me mention that I actually studied what my teacher called Afro-Cuban or Afro-Caribbean percussion, which people here mostly know through salsa. But he used to tell me that he considered people in the United States rhythmically deprived. And the beats that you grew up with, the complexity, you know, it's a very rich musical experience. Here we know 1, 2, 3, 4, or triplets, but you've got a whole other world of sounds and rhythms going on. So talk about that a little bit.
I mean, in Cuba, one of the things that we are very proud to say is that Cuba is an island that everyone wanted to have a little piece of that island. And it came out with a lot of political contradiction, but at the same time, was also commercial-wise, but very, very good. Musical-wise, artistic-wise, was very good. Because in Cuba, in the northeast, we have Santiago de Cuba and Guantanamo, and we have the Haitians coming there. So the Haitians brought La Tumba Francesa. Tumba Francesa, cumba, cumbim, bima, cumbibi, cumba, cumbim, bima, cumbibi. So the Tumba Francesa coming to Santiago de Cuba and Guantanamo, right there you have what came out from there, what we call Nengon and Changui. Changui was in the north part of Guantanamo. And then in the city of Santiago de Cuba, you have the more developed type of music that is called Cuban song. Then when the Spanish Los Mambises are the one who were fighting to get the independence out of the Cuban who were fighting to get the independence out of Spain. This is 1875. So they brought the war from the north side to the east side of Cuba, which is Havana, done with them. So the Cuban song that was in the north side came all the way to Havana. With that, in Havana, we started to introduce different type of element to that. Then we have Congos. We have the Asians in the northeast. We have the Congo. We have the Nigerians from the Yoruba. Then we have the Chinese. We have the Spanish colonies that came out in Cuba. So we have so many different type of blacks, even. So many black communities, different type of blacks and whites and that is so rich that each of them brought their own instrument, their own traditions. And then in Cuba, even if you see me as black as I think that I am, my grandma, my great-grandma is as white as you can be. So my great-grandma, both my great-grandma married black guys. My grandma, that was already light-skinned, married black guys. So that's why in my lineage, I have both. So that's something that is very typical in Cubans. But the legacy to have the opportunity to have so many different cultures in within one island is just superb.
So not only in Central and South America are there many, many musical and percussive styles. Within Cuba, there's a whole range of beats and melodies and styles and influences. So I'm learning a little. Good. Yes, I need to make a trip there and enrich myself a little bit. White guy, you know, Southern California. No, but I crave that. I crave the, you know, other cultures and other sounds and other tastes. It gets very limited to be in your own little world for a long time. But well, it brings me to another point now. A couple of decades ago, there was this big phenomenon called the Buena Vista Social Club. I knew some modern Cuban musicians who were actually kind of upset. Now, the Buena Vista Social Club was about this last generation of musicians, like almost like Frank Sinatra era, 50s, this old kind of nostalgic music. And a lot of white people here really took to it because we wanted this idea of the old days and how, you know, as I say, Rat Pack, Frank Sinatra kind of groovy thing. But the modern Cuban musicians, the friends I had, they said, this is nothing like the music we have now. So they were a little bit put off that that's what we understand Cuban music to be.
No, I mean, I definitely, Buena Vista Social Club as a project has tons of value. Buena Vista Social Club put again, reinvented, or let's say put again in the views and the in the market of the United States, mainly the sound of Cuba, of a traditional Cuba that needed to be rediscovered, needed to be having a platform to be placed out there. And Buena Vista Social Club became that platform. Also, the value is that commercial wise, it's true that the big, you know, the majority of Americans lost the conversation, musical conversation between Cuba and the United States for many years, just because of the lack of industrial opportunities of discographic record labels and radio. The lot of music that Cuba continued to create wasn't available in the United States, wasn't able to get to hear to the ears of the Americans. So Buena Vista Social Club has a lot of values that are in a way open the ears and open the door and open the opportunity for Americans to look back to, oh, in Cuba there is also a lot of people talented that are there, not only smoking cigars and have beautiful women. There is also Cubans that are playing music. Oh, we have been doing it for 60 years after, you know, but you couldn't go there. But so that's the value. In the other hand, it has been misleading as well, because for a lot of Americans, mainly, I mean, Americans in general, I would say American who doesn't read, American who doesn't want to just to get it easy, I would say in general, have been misleading, because a lot of people might not understand that Cuban music is only that. And Cuban music is also, is that as well. Cuban music is Cuban song, Cuban music is cha-cha-cha, Cuban music is also danzón. But and then in 1960, when Fidel Castro took the revolution, a big moment happened where United States, New York, with Celia Cruz, Tito Puente, continued developing what we call a guaracha, son Montuno, Cuban son Montuno in the 50s, and that came out in a way that they had a lot of opportunity to make it very commercial. In the 70s, Tito Puente and company, they had a lot of, you know, the opportunity to make it into record labels and create a very commercial sound that is called salsa, what we call salsa, which is coming from Cuban music, the guarachas of Cuban music back in the 50s. 1959, 1960, when Fidel Castro did the revolution, Cuban music get isolated from the United States. The commercial business didn't happen, but we continue to develop a lot of type of music. This is where we have then Chucho Valdez and Ira Kere, where Chucho Valdez created the sound, the one that I benefit the most today, that is called Afro-Cuban jazz, which is having Joe Sawinol, funk music with a lot of electronic stuff back in the 70s, but with the African tambor. So it was very, very, very recognized sound that are now the young generation continue to benefit, which is Afro-Cuban jazz. So Buenavista Social Club, that has a lot of values, but at the same time, it could be misleading because some people still believe that the Cuban music is only that.
Things evolve, and you're on the leading edge, and you now have an album coming out called Vida, V-I-D-A, and you have a tour supporting it on the west coast of the United States.
Yeah.
You're going to be coming through Los Angeles, playing at Catalina Bar and Grill on April 17th, that's 2024. Tell us about this album and the tour.
Yeah, this album, Vida, comes as a celebration of my 25 years of a professional musician. It comes very easy to say, but it's 25 years of hustling, of loving what we do every day, bam, bam, bam. So 25 years of career. And Vida, it comes from truth, independency, diversity, and love. Vida, verdad, independencia, diversidad y amor. So this album is an album that I'm trying actually to express a more dynamic sound of David Amir Gonzalez, a sound that is a little bit less acoustic. This one is a little more produced. This sound have a, you know, this album is very dynamic, virtuoso, with a lot of synthesizers and vocals, and with a lot of drumming, and it's, you know, it's very dynamic, very exciting. And I can't wait for you guys to hear it. It's going to be, we have already one single out, Transiciones en Azul, featuring the great Pedrito Martinez. Then the 15th of March, we're going to have Soy Cubana, Vida Soy Cubana, second single. On the 29th of March, we have the third single, Afro-Cuban Soul Rebel. And then the big drop is going to be on April 12th. Which is the album, the full album. And we perform on the 17th of April at Catalina, Los Angeles, Hollywood. Let's go.
It's a great venue, important jazz club. The music is very compelling and it's original and a lot of ideas. Tell us a little about your own creative process. How do the ideas come to you? You know, some people it comes in their dreams, or how do you find new sounds?
No, I found new sounds because I'm always listening. I'm listening to different stuff consciously, passively, and listening to a lot of stuff. And then when I wanna go active, this is because among everything that I'm listening passively, something stands out to me. And then in a creative process, I try to sit on the piano. Just that's the very thing that I do. I try to imagine a good melody, I'm listening to different layers in my head, and then I start recording it in my phone, or I go to Sibelius in the computer quickly. But I always try to So with that, I have drums, I have bass, and then I try to imagine what can be a percussion to So with that, I start creating. So if the melody is, if the bass is very busy, I'm trying to create like a melody that is more balanced. So I hear bass, I hear drums, I'm hearing drum set, I hear drum percussion, I'm hearing melodies, and then from that I'm trying to quickly. It's like something that is very eager. I get very eager because I know that a lot of melodies are coming out. I need to quickly record it in my phone or something. And then I go to the computer, record bass, pam, 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 rah, and then I let it sit. And then I do this and I come back out. And then when I come back, I wanna hear it as an audience, how the audience might be listening to the song. It's still very busy, or busy but it's still balanced. How long I want this balance and busy type of sound for how long? Something more cantilever, so the audience and the ears get a refreshment. And then, and at some point, come back to that, you know. So I always try to create contracts, emotions, colors, image. So in within the song, it needs to have a lot of images, a lot of colors, a lot of contrasting stuff, so you don't get bored. So you means the audience doesn't get bored in within the song. And then the same with you have the arc of the whole album. The whole album also need to have a cadence of colors and stuff, you know, have a balance of song, a little more slow, crazy stuff.
Music is just exploding out of you, Dairamir. I have a challenge for you before we wrap up this interview. Right now, come up with some new music. Just sing it. Original.
Just like that. So something like this, I will be eager to have it recorded, since God actually I have it recorded. So then I can come back to it and hear all the elements, and I put it, I grab it, and then sometimes you grab it and then you say, listen, it's not really that good, or I love it. I love the energy. So I'm gonna have to create, or this sounds similar to another song. Oh man. Or you know, there is different type of thing. Sometimes you wake up and it's a you love it or you don't, or it's the app, different things. Exciting.
Any final words for our radio show?
Just to say, everyone, thank you for listening. I'm a Cuban man who is very, very in love with music. I'm in love with life. I believe that we cannot take for granted that we are here today. We are here in this moment in time. Put the time, put the effort to create your own journey. Be a creator in any sense that you can. Create something, write a poem, write a music, write, paint, create a plant. Do something that when your time on earth is not here, you have sometimes a legacy. The legacy can be your children's as well. That's also a legacy. But I'm talking about as well as something, a handy creative, if you can. That would be also good. That people can remember you in many ways. And I will see you if you live in California, if you live in Los Angeles, California. I will see you the 17th of April at 8 p.m. Catalina Bar and Grill, Catalina Jazz Club in Hollywood. You cannot miss it. You heard it here firsthand. Dairamir Gonzalez, Afro-Cuban Jazz in town very soon.
Oh yeah, baby!
Thank you. praising you, my crown, Odisha, Ochun, the goddess of love, the goddess of music. Asking you to intervene, bring love to this world and unite us all. All we need is love, just love. A ti te canto, mi linda Ochun, que siempre me bendigas y me des salud. Que me cubras con tu manto y nunca me abandones. Tu hijo, Dairamir González, con H y bendiciones. Tu sonrisa, tu carisma que me hace lucir. Compartir con todo el mundo eso que me das a mí. Trabajo, amor, sentir. Siempre gracias, mi Ochun, para ti, H.
Bone low, fit the bone low in your low, but so bone low, you're the me.
Yeah, my,
This is Mark Porter Zasada with Stay Human, a search for the mystery, poetry, and sometimes beautiful conundrums of modern life. Today's topic is the purpose of music. Now, music has always been important to our species, going back as far as anyone knows, but never before has music been available everywhere and anywhere at any time as required. And required it has become. To drive in the endless, sun-beaten, million-car crush of a modern highway without the shield of music has become truly unthinkable. But even outside of our cars, how could we function in this ugly, chaotic age and our grim, jumbled cities and keep our heads when global doom is mentioned without the mood and emotion-setting power of nearly non-stop music? Could we do our jobs? Relax? Scrub a floor? Recover from an argument? Make sense of our lives? How could we live without inspirational lyrics, a rising melodic line, a sexual bass beat? I don't know about you, but if I sit in a restaurant which is not playing music, I get nervous, jumpy. I just can't quite get into the meal. Everyone I know not only has a personal playlist, but pursues fierce musical loyalties in a way that humans never did, and of course, never could before. The other day I spoke to a Gen Z friend who told me that he had become suddenly aware of his dependence on nonstop tunes and was struggling to quit, to actually experience silence, to find an escape from modern life without resorting to indie rock. He was dead serious when he told me this. He considered it a kind of generational crisis, right up there with doom scrolling, his musical dependence actually a terrifying change in the human experience. I'll get to his story in a bit. But surely he was wrong to think this. I mean, our ability to conjure music at any moment, to control our consciousness, is a kind of superpower, right? Right up there with jet engines, laser surgery, and Google searches. But let's back up. Let's think for a minute about the changing purposes of music over human time, and try to get a grip on where we are. Consider traditional primitive societies, where music was central to the deepest communal experiences, drumming circles, reed flutes, who knows, but essential to celebrations, group religious trances, pumping up dudes for the hunt. All ways we still use music, right? I mean, sort of the basics. No way I could pump myself up for my daily hunt without music, whether I'm working on a PowerPoint or heading to Whole Foods. Still, back then, I figure music was an almost entirely communal thing. In traditional societies, I suppose people didn't really have their own playlists. They didn't really choose their own vibe. The vibe was chosen for them by shamans, priests, the leader of the hunt. But then, lo, at some point it became possible to access the music of the whole planet, sort through it, pick and choose at will. And then, wow, the biggest shift of all, with operas and musicals, humans learn to adapt music to moment-to-moment shifts in places, emotions, and the nuance of stories. With the advent of movies, this power became greater still, and we began to link music to the frame-by-frame experience of life itself. Our species learned that if the right music could bring actual meaning to a scene in a movie, be it irony, romance, hyper-awareness, or joy, the same could be done for real life, real time. If I find myself on a walk through a dark alley of the soul or a sunlit forest, I can touch the screen on my phone and instantly call meaning into being through my playlist, even if I was just moments before uninvolved or downtrodden. In fact, as my Gen Z friend realized, many of us can no longer take a walk in the forest without music to give it meaning. The other arts are no doubt important. Therapy is nice. Religion does try extra hard. Stories take me out of myself. But like many, I have come to believe that only music can structure my actual life, moment to moment. And perhaps in some Einsteinian way, control time itself. Like I said, it's a kind of new human superpower, a necessary new superpower, having not that much to do with, you know, entertainment. Consider the evolutionary importance of earbuds. I am a believer in science, and I am a firm believer that evolution works hard to produce just what is needed for a species to adapt. And surely what our species needed to adapt to this difficult time and place was earbuds. I am not joking. A few years ago, when my father was dying, as most of us now die, not at home and not in the warm embrace of family, but in a soulless hospital room with beeping monitors, naked under the sheets wearing a catheter and strapped down because of the paranoid delusions induced by morphine, I put earbuds in his ears and played him Mozart for 3 solid days. I played him Mozart, who wrote music expressing the underlying surge of reason in life, the delight of things just right, of human dignity, of clever finesse, of subtle joy in creation. That Mozart. And I think, or at least imagine, that it worked. From time to time he squeezed my hand in those last days. He almost smiled, I swear, listening to Mozart, who maybe, just maybe, saved him from a modern horror and stay human up to the end. Without earbuds and without your playlist, could you stand to ride a bus? Never mind face death. Sure, around the world, each culture finds its own essential playlists. My own is eclectic, I assure you, depending on my mood, yet there are a few essentials, my secret pieces that reset reality, that make sense of nearly any sun-stroked freeway or dark alley of the soul. I expand that playlist carefully, and probably like you, use it to curate my consciousness quite consciously. If I need swagger, there's rap. If I need dignity in the face of love, there's Adele. If I need faith in the underlying order of the universe, there's Johann Sebastian Bach. Right? I need only touch that playlist on the little screen I carry day and night, and I can call the universe to heal. Perhaps most importantly, and no doubt you can relate, I have learned to use music to control time. We all know that one of the deepest sources of human suffering is the experience of time. Consider loss. Consider expectations. Thanks to our species' vast intelligence and memory, we can go back decades and decades through moments painful and beautiful, and then exercise our fearful ability to imagine a terrible or disappointing future. We are, as Kurt Vonnegut said, painfully unstuck in time. They say goldfish have an 8-second memory. I'm not sure if that's true, but in saying that, we are saying with certainty that goldfish, like all lower animals, do not suffer as we do. Music can not only bring us directly into the past with a sense of controlling the past, but by fully occupying the present tense, it brings structure to the immense abyss of time in which we dwell. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Right? No years of Zen training needed. For me, minimalist movie scores work best to control time. Especially when I'm working, when the time stretching forward is undefined, when I cannot hold on to where I am in the flow of my work. Max Richter, Ludovico Einaudi, James Newton Howard. These composers grasp relativity, the relationship of time to the perception of the observer, better than anyone in history. The movie composer Hans Zimmer put it slyly. His goal, he reportedly said, wasn't to write music to tell you what to feel, only that it was time to feel. Think about that. I said that at one time, music was probably an almost entirely communal experience. But now, well, our personal playlist gives us the ability to separate ourselves from others with our unique personal structuring of mood and irony and the pace of time. In fact, these days, our playlists may be our most personal possessions, right? My playlist says, this is where I'm trying to live right now. If you don't enjoy it, back off. Such a superpower, right? Unique in human civilization. Deep within your earbuds, you may or may not choose to share your reality with anyone else on Earth. How great is that? I once visited Sanjusan Gendo Temple in Kyoto, Japan. Trust me, this is going to relate. At this temple, you walk down a hallway 400 feet long. As you walk, you see 1,001 life-size statues of the same bodhisattva standing on bleachers, looking down at you as if you were a sporting competition. Only each statue has slightly different facial features and expressions, and 11 more tiny heads sprout out of the top of each, all different. My guide told me it was my job to survey the 12,000 or so different faces of the bodhisattva and look for the one that meant something to me. It's a profound notion, right? Because the same expression on the same bodhisattva just can't work for everyone. Now, compare that experience to Spotify. I read that about 60,000 new tracks are uploaded to Spotify every day. That's one every 1.4 seconds, more than 100 million already. If music expresses emotions which cannot be expressed any other way, and if each track represents a potential new emotion, new thought, or new way to experience or control reality, well, 60,000 new tracks uploaded every day should do the trick, even better than the 12,000 faces of the bodhisattva. One must certainly mean something to us. I figured the other radical shift in the meaning of music over the last few hundred years is that music actually does now have a face. Little by little, starting somewhere around the time of Beethoven, composers became important personalities. Then the singers, the bands, the conductors, the makers of music as personalities began to play a special vital role in our consciousness, often as large or larger than the music itself, right? You can't hear a Sinatra song without thinking of Sinatra. You can't hear a Beatles song without thinking about Paul and John and, heck, Yoko. Beyonce just released a country music album. Does the music matter most, or does the fact that Beyoncé created it matter most? And herein lies that other vital, modern purpose of music, which has arisen over the last couple hundred years. Not just to convey an emotion or idea that could not be expressed otherwise, but to express a specific human personality. When I experience the sophisticated emotionalism of Adele, I am deeply aware not just of the music, but the personality and force and meaningful presence of Adele herself. The strangely good-natured alienation of Billie Eilish is much more than her catalog. Me, I don't think it's so much that we experience life vicariously through these artists. I actually really hate that word vicariously because it's so patronizing of our emotions. It's more like we experience that such a person exists in the world, and we participate communally in the existence of that power as part of the new heady control music helps us exert over the universe. We act through them. Our personal warriors against a world of fear and disappointment. Plus, every now and then, an artist like Billie Eilish expresses something that a whole group of humans had been experiencing, but had not yet found a way to express. And the mere relief of someone expressing what you feel is an enormous relief indeed. I remember hearing an interview with a guy who said that when he was a teenager in 1991, the release of the song by Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit, saved his life. He played it over and over again as a teenager, obsessively, like a kind of talisman, a shield, and Kurt Cobain became the warrior fighting this boy's fight. The pressure of being that talisman, of being that warrior, did take Kurt Cobain out, right? He died of heroin addiction. Amy Winehouse, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix. I happened to meet Billie Eilish when she was young, before she was famous. And like others, I saw that strange streak of genius in her eyes. And now when I see her, I wonder how she's holding up. I mean, with the responsibility of being a talisman. Now I look into her eyes when she performs, doing that big job for us, and I wonder. I suppose it was also a high-pressure job for shamans leading drum circles back when. But someone has to do it, right? And thank God someone does. But what about that dark side my Gen Z friend talked about? Sure, our infinite access to music, our playlists, our ability to control time and conjure musical personalities to fight our mental battles, all that represents a radical new human power over reality itself. But like any superpower, surely this one can also be abused. I know I can accidentally lose myself in some endless looping playlist which limits my thought, or I can use my earbuds to separate me from ordinary reality, from my family. And maybe it's a special generational issue. I mean, I can remember the days before earbuds, how I experienced life in that bygone era. That might give me a certain advantage. Like I started telling you, my friend the Gen Zer recently tried to stop wearing his earbuds all the time, to find his own thoughts uninfluenced by the thoughts of others, to experience reality on his own terms, walking down the street or looking up at the wind through trees, without Hans Zimmer telling him when to feel, without a superstar singer fighting his mental battles for him. He went cold turkey, and he told me that for about 2 weeks he had to carry his earbuds in his pocket just in case he couldn't handle it. He said he well remembers the day he didn't notice that he was no longer carrying those earbuds around, when he was just there, alone, in silence. Nevertheless, I still ask him for his playlists. They're really good, and I want him to know that I am resolved to use the purposes and power of unlimited music responsibly. But like most people I know, forcefully. I mean, sure, I have other strategies to defend against the daily chaos of opinions and ideas, peoples and cultures in which I can never quite find my footing. I have books, family, religion, Shakespeare. But my playlists, those are essential weapons. This has been Mark Porter Zasada with Staying Human. You can find me at stayinghuman.net.
We are coming to the end of the Mystic Pete Chronicles. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. In today's show, I interviewed the remarkable Cuban-American composer and musician Dairamir Gonzalez and played his musical pieces Afro-Cuban Soul Rebels, Vida Soy Cubana, and Transiciones en Azul. And we just wrapped up the show with an essay by Mark Porter Zasada, Purpose of Music. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with the very best of talk radio. Mystic Pete out.